Imagine a show about YA books, but done in the style of Family Guy.
So every 5 seconds they cut away to like a fantasy sequence, and then they come back and they insult women.
Men, it's my fantasy.
Talking about young adult literature is not for the faint of heart. There's fashion atrocities, queer subtext, problematic love interests, and that's just for a start. But never fear, 'cause Carrie and Murray are here, and this is Go Your Own YA.
Readers and listeners, welcome to Go Your Own YA. I'm Murray.
And I'm Carrie.
This week we read Very Le Freak by Rachel Cohn. Carrie, do you want to tell us about it?
Sure. I'm going to open up this book, which I have next to me, because readers and listeners, I am not well today, and my brain is fuzzy.
And this book is kind of a early aughts fever dream of a book, which doesn't help.
Yes, that's true. And the summary of the book doesn't help much either, because it glosses over about half of the book.
I could start you off with the best thing. And that's that the bisexual girl gets the girl in the end. That's not a spoiler. It's a selling point.
Yeah, and this was the selling point that friend of the podcast, Lisa, I believe, she's really excited that she got a shout out last week. So I want to make a big deal about her shout out this week. I think she's the one who told me to read this one, and she hooked me into it with redheaded bisexual heroine. And again, I don't necessarily need to read books about characters who are exactly like me, but it's really great to see characters who are like me. So redheaded bisexual heroine, I'm here for it. So this is Very Le Freak. Her real name is Veronica, but she goes by Very Le Freak. It's her online handle, and her online life is pretty much her entire life. She is a freshman at Columbia, and as we get to know her a bit better, we get to learn more about the very tragic upbringing that she's had. But on the surface, she is like the ultimate party girl and addicted to her devices in a way that we were starting to worry about back when this book was published in 2010, but perhaps not as many think pieces were being written about it as they are now. We'll have to talk more about that. But all of these things, very feeling kind of adrift and having trouble balancing her online life and reality and coming to terms with the traumas in her backstory, lead to her friends having an intervention for her and sending her off to online rehab, where she stays for 28 days, and the book covers all the time leading up to that. It covers the time in rehab, and it covers a little bit about where she's going to go from the end of that. Very learns some important lessons, and she gets the girl at the end. And I think I just made that book sound really boring and snotty because of my poor nose, but it's not boring. It's a very interesting book with a lot of stuff to talk about.
So here's the thing about Very. Problematic fave does not begin to cover who she is as a person. Readers and listeners, if you are somebody who doesn't have a lot of patience for the journey of becoming a good person or a decent person, or as the kids call it today, woke, you're probably not going to enjoy Very Le Freak. If you like people with big personalities, you know, tangled up histories, a ton of feelings, and not a lot of answers, topped off with a gigantic imagination, Very is your girl.
Yeah, this is a book that is about a very messy person. And I think kids don't do messy as much as they used to.
Messy is a thing which is very hard to pull off. I do think Rachel Cohn pulls this off beautifully with her.
Yes.
But the thing about being messy is you hurt people, and Very hurts people. And she acknowledges this hurt because the program she ends up in is based on 12 steps. And part of the 12 step is acknowledging the hurt you have caused people and talking to them and asking for forgiveness and saying you're sorry. Also part of, I was going to say CBT, DBT, the other one. The one you can safely Google at work.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember having a conversation with someone who mentioned CBT to me, and I was like, oh yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy. And they were like, no. And I was like, computer-based training? And they were like, no. And I was like, oh.
Did David make an animation for it? Hi, readers and listeners, you're not going to get that at all.
Oh, they will, because our listeners are about five people, all of whom watched that video and some of whom were in that video. So,
and if they're not, they'll make up their own story. James.
I think we should just put that video in the show notes, even if we cut this part out. It's a great video.
Yes, we should.
Singing soccer balls. What's wrong with that?
Yes. We've mentioned this in the past, but Carrie belongs to a musical cult. It's sort of like Meatballs meets The Apple.
Yes, that's exactly what it's like. Actually, I think that movie is Wet Hot American Summer.
That's amazing. So there isn't a really good movie that is an analog to my cult experience. I mean, we could possibly call it Reverse But I'm a Cheerleader, where we go to camp to become more gay.
That will help us get back on track, because it's a movie that I kept thinking of reading this book.
Yes, and it is a movie that's a bit hard for sensitive hearts, even as campy and over the top as it is. If you have not seen this movie, it's about a girl that gets sent to camp to become ungay and ends up falling in love with one of the other campers. And it's made to be over the top and cute and campy, and RuPaul is in it out of drag. But the thing is, it's sort of what was funny back in 1997 is no longer funny in the dystopian 2017.
I will say it's got one of my favorite love scenes of all time with yes. one of my favorite soundtracks yes. of all time. And funnily enough, Wet Hot American Summer is the other one that I think of that has one of my favorite beautiful queer sex scenes.
The Incredible Adventures of Two Girls in Love has an amazing one. The music is great, but it kind of sounds like a 70s Sesame Street soundtrack.
As if something is wrong with that.
I don't know if I can put that scene in the show notes, but I'll try to find the music track and put it there.
If you can put Glass Face Cello Case somewhere in there too. Oh my god. So beautiful.
Yes, because I imagine that's the song that's playing yes! as this book ends.
And then just like 20 Dressy Bessie songs in a row. Although Very doesn't listen to enough female artists.
To bring it back around, Very, one of the ways that she expresses herself is making soundtracks. And her process is really fun, but yeah, she doesn't listen to enough female and femme artists.
Yeah, but it's fun looking at what she puts together, her daily playlists, and the way she puts songs together thematically. It's something that I do in my head, and something that it's fun to see other people do.
I think I have one of them quoted, so let me... The book opens up with Very's birthday, and she's planning a blowout, both offline and on. And here's her talking about her playlist for her birthday. That was it. Today's primary playlist, Very decided, would be called simply Happy Birthday to You, Very LaFreak. Very's top personal goal, beyond mythic goals like eating more protein and vegetables or volunteering to teach mobile electronic communication skills to the elderly, was to make a music mix to commemorate each and every move that should strike her. To seek spiritual enlightenment and physical well-being in life was challenging enough. To exist within one's soul without proper musical inspiration for each day's quest, it was just plain pathetic. An existence it's not worth living. Very decided, this year's commemorative B-Day list would include The Ballad of Cap'n Crunch by Pirates Are Us, covers of Happy Birthday by Loretta Lynn, New Kids on the Block, and Weird Al Yankovic, plus an assortment of Moody Boy Trouble songs TBD and some Irish pub drinking songs, and conclude with Stevie Wonder's Happy Birthday, obviously.
That made me think of another section of the book that I really like, which is very connecting with people at the rehab facility by singing disco with them.
Yes.
While I was thinking of that, I was thinking about the whole premise of the book and how you would think if someone was having their technology taken away from them, it would be because they were isolating themselves. That's always the concern and has been since the dawn of the internet. People getting sucked into the internet and then not having any real life friends. And all of their friends are just, you know, old men who live in their grandmother's basements or whatever the stereotype is that people on the internet secretly are. But Very is not that kind of person. Very is a socialite. She is always planning giant blowout events for everybody in the school. She's well liked. She has a tiny circle of kind of her best friends, but she seems to be on good terms with plenty of people in school. You know, it's just interesting to me that she is targeted as someone who needs her devices taken away from her because she doesn't fit the stereotype. What do you think?
A thing that I appreciated was in her meeting with Dean Dean, who she sees or wants to see as a father figure, and who does fulfill that role in his limited scope as Dean Dean. He says, if you could take this power and use it for good or to mean something, it would be one thing, but what you're creating is meaningless and disruptive. Which, I mean, I have my feelings about that, but also not a bad point. Like, take this and do something, like make something of yourself, even if that something isn't a Columbia student.
Right. And I don't see her going back to Columbia, and that's fine. And I'd kind of like to see a sequel because I really want to see more books that are exploring the idea of what to do after high school besides go to college.
There is a charming book that came out 2008. It's called Down to the Bone by Mayra Lazara Dulles. And it's about a Latina girl who gets kicked out of her home after being discovered sexting her girlfriend, and what her life is like after she's kicked out of school and her home. And it is, if you like this book, you will like that one. It has a similarly very feisty narrator and a lot of fun things going on and a really high energy plot.
Yeah, that sounds good. My current read actually goes back to what I was saying too about exploring, you know, what happens if you don't go on to college, or at least exploring the idea that that's a possibility, that not everybody has to follow the 4 years of high school into 4 years of undergrad. It's the line that our generation was fed, and now you've got millions of college-educated people wandering around not being able to get jobs. So,
hire me.
It sucks. Yes, hire Marie.
I can do this. I can also file.
When you said, I can do this, I imagined that you were doing some kind of, like, trick with your hands. Because I couldn't see you, like, I can do this, and you're doing do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and your hands are...
Oh, I'm making a bunny. I'm making
perfect.
A bunny. That's what I'm doing.
I was referencing Art Matrano, who... Well, our readers and listeners will know who he is because our readers and listeners are all 60-year-old men. Hey guys, what's up? But the average current YA reader would not know. Look up Art Matrano. Just believe me when I say people think he's funny.
We'll put it in the show notes.
And I like to do his shtick for my kids and then just watch them look at me as if I am the stupidest, strangest person in the world. Very Le Freak is a book we're reading this week.
It does not involve a scene where Jesus is doing Art Metrano tricks.
I had a feeling you might remember the Family Guy reference. Thank you. So I have a question for you. Have you ever been separated from your devices for an extended period of time?
Inpatient. So they come and they put you, well, no, they let me put myself in a robe and they take away your phone. And you get to hang out in a blank room until the doctor wakes up. And then you go make friends with the morning nurses and you get a little cup of apple juice while they take your blood. They go up your nose and keep a little
piece. And then you get to keep the little piece of brain they take out.
Who's that?
Who's that in there?
Who's that in there?
But that was when you were separated from your devices.
It was, though Hannah, the gentle angel she is, because the hospital I was at is across a park, like a big park, from our apartment building. And she would go back and forth across the park every evening with the books that I had finished reading and bring me new ones. And I had a stack about 20 deep on my bedside.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to keep myself busy.
Yes.
I made some great friends, don't get me wrong. So yeah, forcible detox is really not fun. I think even more so than ever, because this was at the dawn of the iPhone age. I remember seeing the advertisement for the iPhone. What was it, like 2007? It was the first or second semester of senior year of college is when they announced the iPhone. So the iPhone was, you know, still a little baby thing at the time. So a lot of the talk in the book is about laptops and flash mobs.
Right. She has multiple devices and flash mobs I wanted to talk about.
Yes.
And she, oh my God, do you guys remember flash mobs?
Remember that? Remember
they were like knitting, but
knitting,
not.
But in public. Well, they were like knitting in public, but together.
I will say I did participate in several flash mob-esque events. I did do the MP3 experiment, which was a thing where you put on your iPods and then you all listened to an MP3 that told you what to do. And it was like, and now we'll take balloons and we'll run across the room and we'll like hit each other with balloons. And now we'll all sing the Hallelujah chorus. And, you know, people are walking by and going, what are those crazy people doing? And you're like, it's the new millennium, bitches. And that's how it went.
That was new Mindspace.
Oh my God,
that.
Yes, it was. Yes.
I was so into that time period where it felt like all these new forms of technology were bringing us together to be something a little bit more gentle and magical and loving and whimsical. And now it's more like we gather together to bring down President Snow.
Yeah.
Remember when we used to get together in public for fun? Yeah, this is a book with a healthy dose of optimism. It was originally started in the mid-1990s.
1996, which stuck in my head because 96 was when I decided I was going to write like the first novel written entirely in email and instant message. And then, you know, I was a freshman in college, so I got very busy with college. And then a million other people wrote that book, and now who cares anymore? But
I was going to say Snail Mail No More came out around then, right?
Beaten to the punch by Anna Martin again.
And Paula Danziger, and Paula, may she rest in peace.
Oh, bless her.
The Danziger Award is up for nominations. We'll put a note in the show notes to memorialize your favorite funny book and hopefully not start a Twitter war.
I think a Twitter war might be good. It might help us with publicity.
I was going to say, like, it's almost like I want to do something problematic so people will talk about us. But I want to do something problematic, but not something where we hurt people, which means I think we have to get involved in a shipping war.
I think we can do that. I think we can handle it.
Yeah, but all my ships are trains.
There are so many things wrong with that statement. I can't even get into it. What I will get into is romantic relationships in the novel Very Le Freak.
Let's talk about terrible boys.
The gallery of terrible boys.
Slut shaming.
Yes, let's talk about terrible boys and slut shaming and rape culture and the patriarchy.
Oh my God, let's smash things.
Everything here is Hannah's, or I would smash some things.
Everything next to me is something that I care about because I'm in my little nook in the room that's supposedly a second bedroom but is more like an office and storage space, and I'm right next to all of my journals from the last 30 years, so nothing's gonna get smashed, only the patriarchy. So let's talk about terrible boys.
So Very is part of a group of four close friends: herself, her roommate Jennifer, who she calls Lavinia because
why not?
That is really sort of her reasoning. She's like, you're more of a Lavinia than a Jennifer. And Jennifer is definitely the Felix Unger to her other guy.
Oscar Madison.
That one.
Old guys, you know what we're talking about.
The one who is always lending her money and doing her laundry and loving her and wanting her to be a better person. Not because she wants to sleep with her, but because she sees the vulnerable and caring person below the party girl veneer.
Yep, I love Lavinia. Or Jennifer. I have to wonder if she eventually asserts herself after the book ends and is like, dude, my name is Jennifer. Or if she just goes, hey, I guess I really am a Lavinia.
Who's read the book A Tree Grows in Brooklyn and remembers the scene where Francie's uncle asserts himself and doesn't let her aunt call him by the nickname she called all of her previous husbands?
Oh, yes.
Readers and listeners, we should have a jingle for the books we can never cover. It's not that we can never cover it. It's just that there has been so much talk about these books and we don't know how well they fit the needs of our readers and listeners in the modern day, which is a short way of saying this book is intensely problematic. And there's a scene wherein that happens and the uncle goes, my name is Steve. Steve, not John. Steve, who am I? And the nieces and nephews go, Uncle Steve? He said, I'm putting on my coat. He's, you know, they're like, why? What are you doing, Steve? He's like, well, this is my house. And in my house, when we have company, we get ice cream. And he goes, and Francie's mother says, finally, a man in the family. And the aunt goes, I could marry a guy like that. I love that book a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Lavinia is somebody who is very kind-hearted, intelligent, and caring, and maybe is not so great with the asserting herself, although we do see hints and pinches of her life outside being Very's roommate.
Yes, we do get to see who she is outside Very, and from the beginning of the book, we see that Very resents the idea that Lavinia / Jennifer has a life outside her.
Because she's so normal, and she, Very herself, never got to be normal like that.
Yeah, there's some interesting parallels between Very and Lavinia. And Gwyn and Dimple.
Yes.
From Born Confused. So if you've read both of them, you'll you'll see what I mean.
This includes cultural appropriation, but we'll get into that later. There are two boys that make up the rest of their friend group. There is Sean Wen, who is an Asian, French-Canadian hacker, gamer, pretty decent guy all around.
Yeah, John Wayne.
John Wayne. There we go.
As in John Wayne.
Because his parents met and bonded over spaghetti westerns. Yeah, he's kind of like the good cop to everybody else's bad cop. And she identifies him as the one who will eventually cave when they put her through her first detox, and she is correct. And then there's Brian.
Oh, Brian.
What do you think of Brian? Because I don't think anything good.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about Brian. I feel like very hurts him, but I also feel like he is not a great guy. And, well, what college freshman male is, first of all. And second of all, like, well, why is it that I say something like that? This episode is being recorded in the wake of the Me Too hashtag. And, you know, why is it that I don't expect more from a college freshman?
Because hashtag Me Too. That's why. Yeah. I mean, Very is somebody who takes advantage of his kindness, but in turn, he is very much the archetypical nice guy. And also, there's a little bit of a love triangle in the beginning between Lavinia, Brian, and Very, and none of them are good at handling it. But, yeah, no, lots of bad things happen. But, I don't know, it's after he says the thing to her and he does the thing to her is when I lost all compassion for Brian. And they had to call an ambulance for what was left of him.
Oh my god, everyone's really mad about Brian. Guys, he's not real.
Or is he all too real? So here's the thing, Very is somebody who gives and she gives and she gives. And one of the things she gives, along with her four friends, is a social network, a sort of, I'm not going to say proto-Facebook because Facebook exists in this, yeah. Call the ambulance. Brian's feelings.
Oh my god, so many white boy feelings.
No, she does play with him, but then he says a thing to her, which yes. is horrible. And he does a thing which is also horrible. Anyway, she creates a social network called The Grid, which is sort of an underground Facebook. And they use this to organize flash mobs and all sorts of creative insurrections in and around campus. And that is one of the things that gets her ultimately, like, called into the dean's office. So between the partying, the flash mobbing, the annoying the donors, and her failing grades because she turned in a paper that was about Plato's homoeroticism as opposed to his philosophy, and imagining which space-age rock star he would be. I still remember, I'm pretty sure it's this book where she had a class and it was abbreviated to Lit Hum, which she always imagined as the old masters humming while they banged each other.
I believe that's this book, yes. So we covered those boys. There's also Elvirus / Vikram.
Elvirus is her online love, and he leaves a series of mysterious clues for her when he goes AWOL, or AFK in this case. And it drives her nuts in the way that young, all-encompassing love affairs taking place only on the internet can do.
And then she eventually finds him in person.
When she goes to rehab. But the way that she gets to rehab is, well, she falls off the wagon, she sleeps with somebody, and then finds out that Brian had been the one who betrayed the grid and all of her other doings to the dean because he was mad that she had slept with him and then said, hey, JK. Mm-hmm. And also, Brian was saying that Very had no personality and made up for it with her programming and her social media skills, which fuck you, Brian.
Yeah.
And then when she goes to confront him, stark raving nude, mind you, the morning after.
Yes.
Well, he is also stark raving nude. She finds out that he has not only confiscated her laptop, that he claims that Elvirus sent a virus to it and that it was unfixable. And he threw it in a trash compactor. Now, this laptop was what she bought with her deceased mother's college fund for her. It is the last touchstone she has with her late mom. So Very tries to kill him.
Yep. Literally. And that's how she ends up in rehab.
She blacks out, ends up in a hospital, and then she is off to escape a rehab for the technologically addicted.
And escape is an interesting place. We've said already that it's 12-step based. Because it's a building that was a former fat farm and then turned into something else and turned into something else. And they were trying to find a way to make it work. And then it became a rehab facility for people addicted to technology.
The Yankee hippie son of the original owners still lives on the property and sells homegrown coffee and cookies to the various folks of Escape and gives them a place to hang out in that's not campus.
Jones is a great character. I really enjoyed him.
Jones and Dr. Joy Kunst, a.k.a. Dr. Killjoy.
Yes, I couldn't remember her real name. All I could remember was Dr. Killjoy.
I just appreciated they went for Dr. Killjoy over the more obvious and less classy.
Yeah.
And they have, even though Jones, as far as I know, doesn't really have a hand in the program, he has his hands elsewhere. Anyway, he and Dr. Killjoy get into giant ideological arguments, which are a valuable source of entertainment for escapees.
Yeah, the escape culture is interesting. As someone who hasn't been in that kind of facility before, I don't know how much of it feels accurate to someone who has been in a 12-step program. I've certainly known and loved plenty of people who have gone through 12-step programs mm-hmm. and that kind of recovery, and that feels accurate to me. But so far, no one has successfully taken away my smartphone, so I cannot speak to that aspect of the story.
I have a lot more appreciation for what escape is. I previously read it as being not very effective and more detrimental than not. And upon this reread, I realized how much Very was getting out of it, despite being somebody who was skeptical and obviously suffering from detox.
Right. Yeah, I felt the same way. This is my second time reading it since it was published, and I appreciated that as well. Very really does, as much as she swings perilously close to like going back to her old ways, and as much as she struggles because she really is dealing with an addiction, she learns and she grows, and I think she comes out of it a much fuller and healthier person.
A scene that I really liked in this, and something that I had wish I experienced in my program, was where she talks about kitchen duty and how much it has actually done for her and all of the different strategies she has for dealing with certain types of escapees. Like seeing disco with the oldies, because everybody loves disco. And Sunday night is awesome because we get strawberry shortcake and that makes for the best leftovers.
Exactly. And there are really nice descriptions of her like doing her laundry and other chores. And she complains that they're just being used as servants, but she also realizes that, you know, she's having this idyllic, like, the magic of working with your hands kind of experience.
Her flights of fancy when she is having these, yes. When she's like, maybe I'll just become a washerwoman. It's like, I identify with that so hard. It's when I, nowadays, when I find anything I like doing, I'm like, what if I did this for money?
Right. Oh my God, that is so me 12 years ago. Oh my Lord. Oh, I feel for you so hard.
Anyway, so Very is having a very good experience at Escape.
And she has a great therapist. I wanted to bring up Keisha, too, because Keisha is fabulous.
Keisha's my age, and I want to be Keisha. Keisha is such a good therapist, and she has such a good strategy. It's something where you can parody what happens or even write very ineffective therapy, not being a therapist yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, writers can't be everything, but she's such a good therapist, and she's dealing with such heavy stuff. But she never, ever minimizes Very or makes her feel guilty about what had happened in her past.
Yeah, and Very really opens up to her. This is the part of the book where we finally see what Very has been hiding and what she's been trying to escape from in her past. And that she's able to do it with Keisha is a testament to Keisha's talents as a therapist and to how safe Very feels at escape and in therapy with this therapist.
And the way that Keisha keeps her on track is accurate to what a therapist will do for you to keep you around, and a very compassionate way of going about it, because Very's at a point where she's like, I'm too dangerous a person, I have to leave to keep other people safe. And Keisha says, well, can you stay for me? Because I believe in you.
And I think that is going to help us circle back to just addressing that there is a lot of slut shaming happening in this book. And it is true to the character. It's true to Very as she's trying to deal with some trauma in her past and reconciling the kind of person she thinks she is with who she is now, how she behaves. It's hard to explain without spoiling things. And it's hard to explain without sounding like I'm trying to shame her for doing things or for having shame, you know?
It's the perspective of somebody who has had trauma, is acting out the result of her trauma, and who is looking for anybody else to blame, because deep down she is that scared, adrift 12-year-old girl.
God. Yeah, my maternal instincts just come out in full force reading about some of the stuff Very goes through and the things she's remembering from her past. And I just want to take care of her.
I know. She has a lovely great aunt who has been her legal guardian since her mom died and who does her best to understand her. But there are some things she just never found out about Very's past. Hopefully, going forward in the future, I think they are going to be more open with each other. At least that's where the narrative sort of leads us to believe.
Yeah, it's a book that ends on a very hopeful note. Like we said, you know, Dressy Bessie songs are playing in the background and they're like literally running off into the sunset. So I hope for
sunrise,
excuse me. That's even better because it's morning and it's the promise of a new day. So maybe Paula Abdul is playing. But anyway, it's a book that ends on a hopeful note and, you know, you want the best for Very and for Lavinia and for all the other people. Even Brian, I guess. Maybe you don't want him to die in a fire. An Elvirus, yeah.
So we hadn't talked about Elvirus, but we can say he shows up in the flesh and he is not all that he seems, but he is somebody who also has a lot of growing and changing to do.
So much to do.
I mean, I have a lot more sympathy for him because he's a teenager in the throes of addiction.
Yes.
So I have more compassion for him than I do for Brian.
Yeah. Brian is just mad that somebody doesn't love him.
Like, that's your problem,
dude. Yeah.
Whereas deal with it. Elvirus is dealing with so many things, including some things that come his way via Very, and he might not have the words to describe yet.
Cultural appropriation.
Yeah, she basically all but says that he is Kama Sutronic.
Yeah. Oh.
Very. Definitely the viewpoint of a girl who kind of grew up among, like, white and American and European backpackers,
yep,
traveling in the global south, exotifying all sorts of things.
Yeah, there's definitely some fetishization of different cultures, and it makes for uncomfortable reading. But we are dealing with a main character who is very flawed. And we are also looking at a book that was published a decade ago and was begun and written in its first form 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, it is really delightful to read the unabashed joy and excitement that Veri has in her sexuality.
Yes.
But it is something that she came into far too young. And yeah, she needs Keisha in her life.
Yeah. I will say this is, I think, one of maybe two or three YA books I've ever read that address threesomes.
There are some polyamorous YA books coming out now, which is...
I've seen that, yeah.
That is cool. That is something I never thought I would see addressed out of, like, genre lit, but
right.
Awesome. Awesome. Good for y'all. Keep breaking those boundaries.
I know.
Yeah, it was such a good book. Carrie, where do you think Veri is now?
I want to hope with all my heart that she is not, like, running some kind of mid-level marketing scheme. But I kind of feel like she ends up, it's like a cool one. It's like cool badass leggings or cool, awesome badass nail wraps. But I feel like she's the mastermind behind something like that. What do you think? Give her a better future than I just did.
I think that she is President Bella's social media manager, and she helped her win the 2016 primary.
Yes. Oh, I knew you'd be able to come up with something better. And that goes with our grand unified theory of YA as well.
Coming soon to our website.
Along with biographies of ourselves.
Yeah, we should write those, shouldn't we?
We should do that. So, any final thoughts about this book?
It's a lot of fun. It is a fantastic portrait of a all too short period of time where it felt like there was a world of possibility in social media and the connections it made offline and on.
Do you have a read-alike?
I have a strange read-alike. And it is equally problematic, but I feel like if you enjoy the narration and joie de vivre of this book, that you will enjoy it. And it is Anti-Mame by Patrick Dennis.
Oh my god, that's perfect.
Anti-Mame is the rich socialite aunt of Patrick Dennis, who becomes his mother figure when he is orphaned and takes him along for the wild ride of her life. And now she is somebody where terrible things happen to her, but she always comes out on top. She is always a champion for the underprivileged, and she is a very giving and exuberant individual. And unfortunately, there is a lot of its time stuff.
Yes.
But then there is a lot of not of its time stuff. So, reader, beware. But it is a really fun book and a really fun movie as well.
A few different versions out there.
Yeah. There is an unfortunate Japanese stereotype. It's not good. Don't watch it.
Yeah, that's actually why I turned it off, I remember.
Yeah, it's along the lines of
Mickey Rooney.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to watch it in the book.
Yeah, and you can skim over it and you can enjoy the book for what it is. Yeah.
Do you have a read-alike for this book?
I do. My read-alike is Rachel's Holiday by Marion Keyes. And this is taking us a little further back to the chick-lit explosion of the early aughts.
Aww.
I know. And I loved Marion Keyes so much. I haven't kept up with her as much as I should have, but I always really enjoyed her books. So Rachel's Holiday is another book about rehab and recovery, narrated by a wonderfully wild and charismatic and unreliable narrator. So if those are things you liked about Veri Le Freak, then you will probably also like Rachel's Holiday.
That sounds fantastic. Carrie, what are you currently reading?
My current read is linked in a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of way to Very Le Freak. I just finished reading You Know Me Well by David Levithan and Nina LaCour.
Oh.
And of course, David Levithan and Rachel Cohen have written several books together. And I'm sure we will talk about them as we go on in the podcast.
Have you ever seen them in the same place?
I think the two of them and Peter Larangis are all the same person. Okay, they're either the same person or they are giant dolls that Anna Martin has created.
Or tiny dolls Anna Martin has created, and they all live in a little dollhouse above her writing desk. And they leave her tiny, tiny pages and she has to transcribe them and send them off to Scholastic. I am so sorry. Please continue.
So this is a book about tiny dolls. No, so You Know Me Well by David Levithan and Nina LaCour. The word that I keep thinking of about this book is like reliable. And that sounds horrible. It sounds like damning with the faintest of faint praise. But what I mean is it's a book that David Levithan and Nina LaCour wrote together. It's exactly what you want from that. It's beautifully written. Little hints of magical realism, I feel like, here and there. It's queer kids coming to terms with their identities. It's great swoony romantic scenes. It's a lot of fun. So I highly recommend it.
That's awesome, Carrie.
I thought so.
I will have to check that one out. Preferably in tiny dollhouse form.
Yes, the tiny dollhouse form is great because the regular one won't fit in your tiny dollhouse when you're reading it.
And I like my manuscripts to be kitten size so I can take Aww. Cute Instagram photos.
Yes. It's all about the cute Instagram photos. What are you currently reading?
I am reading the book Pie in the Sky by Wendy Mass. It is a middle grade novel about existentialism, alternate universes, and pie.
That sounds delicious.
We've been talking a lot about Daniel Pinkwater. If you enjoy his novels, you would really like this one.
Yeah, I've read a little bit of Wendy Mass. That sounds really fun. I will check that one out.
A Mango-Shaped Space is the book that most people remember her for. It's about death of a pet and synesthesia. It is a wonderful book. It is the weakest of her books, I believe. I've enjoyed The Candy Makers. I've enjoyed 13 Birthdays. And now I am loving Pie in the Sky. And I know Every Soul a Star made my friend cry, but I'm not going to tell you which friend.
Oh my God, yes. I loved Every Soul a Star. Oh. Is that it? Is that all we have to say for ourselves this week?
I think it is.
All right. That was Go Your Own YA. And do you want to tell everyone, you want to do our catchphrase?
Do something good for yourself and bad for the patriarchy.
Excellent. We'll see you next time.
Good night, listeners. Good night.
Good night. I don't know what that was, but...